It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and I'm told that today is National Public Gardens Day, which makes it a great day to talk about some of the beautiful public gardens in Iowa. With me is Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, which is a public garden in Ames, Iowa. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Cindy Haynes is also here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is going to join us in a few minutes. I'm sure he has a word or two to say about public arboretums. But let's talk about this holiday, National Public Gardens Day. You guys didn't just make this up.
No, no, not at all. This is a day. It is always the Friday before Mother's Day. And it is an opportunity for folks to celebrate these wonderful institutions that are in our communities.
All right. And the Friday before Mother's Day, probably not a coincidence.
No. These are, you know, Mother's Day is always a really busy day for us at Ryman Gardens. And it's a busy weekend at a lot of public gardens, botanical gardens, arboretum, whatever you want to call them. They are always busy this weekend because it's always the kind of the first reliable, nice weekend of the growing season. And it's a great place to take mom.
Right. We want to go. We want to be out.
Yeah.
So we want to see flowers.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to be treated well.
In every community, there are usually some places where, you know, maybe the public park is nicely planted and there are nice places to go and see flowers. But what makes a park a public garden? What takes it that next step?
Yeah. So public gardens are organizations at their core that have collections. So they have plants that they are maintaining and documenting. And actually, as an organization, they're actually really similar to places like museums or zoos. But instead of art pieces or polar bears, public gardens have plants. And so they often have a mission that talks about education, beautification, preservation, and conservation. They are typically very beautiful places, but they're also very focused on teaching and showing folks about gardening and plant ecosystems and all of those things. So they are kind of that next level up because of that. And they always have professionals, whether they're volunteers or paid staff, to help manage all of these collections and programs and educational opportunities.
Do we know how many public gardens there are in Iowa?
Well, you know, as you can imagine, the definition is somewhat broad. And there are at least 10 really easily definable public gardens across the state and many others that have elements that I just talked about. So they have great professional volunteers or staff, but maybe they don't maintain plant records or they don't do some of those things. So the list is hard to nail down. And every time I try to give a list, I always get an email that I left somebody off. So it's hard for me to give a comprehensive list. But the American Public Gardens Association, which they have a wonderful website, www.publicgardens.org. And they have a great listing of public gardens across the state. And you can even search them by your location to find one near you. And again, it's not a complete comprehensive list, but it gets a lot of the really great spots across the state of Iowa that you could visit this weekend.
Wonderful. And if you have a favorite public garden near you or maybe not near you, you can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tell us the name of the garden, where it is, and why you love it so much so we can mention some of those throughout the hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, going and looking at the pretty flowers and wandering around a garden is a really lovely thing to do. So there's that to do in a public garden on the basic level. But you mentioned curating the collection and so they're also great places to learn about plants you might want to bring into your landscape, right?
Right. And most of these places, one of the things many of them do is simply label plants. And having plants labeled so folks know what they might be, and hopefully can go out and look for them, because this is a great weekend to go shopping for plants too. Many of these organizations focus on plants that are well adapted to places like Iowa in Iowa. So a great example is the Iowa Arboretum out by Ledges State Park near Madrid. And this is an organization that's been around for, I think, since the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they've been growing trees and shrubs and perennials all that time to show folks what does well in Iowa so that you can come there, you can see what a full-grown Kentucky coffee tree looks like and see if it's something that you want in your own yard, because you can see that it does well.
Right, and you can see with your own eyes, hey, these are thriving here.
Right.
So maybe I do want to put them in my own yard.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, they're just beautiful places to be. I you know, as a result of collecting all these plants, these places are really peaceful and inspire a lot of artistic and creative thoughts, and they're just wonderful places to hang out.
Now, last week on the show, we were talking about lilacs, and Denny Schrock, who was the guest last week, mentioned Ewing Park in Des Moines, which has a lilac arboretum, and which I hadn't heard about that before. So if there are specific kinds of plants that you are exploring for your landscape, is there a way to find out if there's a public park somewhere in Iowa that really, or public garden somewhere in Iowa that specializes in that kind of plant?
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, especially because these places are dedicated to sharing their collections and their sites with the public, they do typically have nice websites. So that's always a spot to get started with. And some of these things really are, you know, for better or for worse, they're hidden gems, right? Mm-hmm. So you learn about them by listening to Talk of Iowa and having people talk about them. You learn about them by talking to your gardening friends. Hopefully you continue to spread the word about them so other folks can enjoy them. Because enjoyment by the public is one of the other big factors that separates a public garden from some other similar location, like a corporate garden or a private spot.
So do you have any advice for people who want to learn more about plants and want to go to these places? Do you have a specific approach to exploring a public garden?
I think just visiting is a big part of it. Just making sure you get it on the itinerary. It's one of the things when we go on vacation, I think my family kind of rolls their eyes out a little bit because we always have to go to all of them. But in the end, everybody enjoys them, whether they're big gardeners or not. And, you know, sometimes I may say, well, we won't go to all of them. You know, you go to a place, you know, like we go to New York City, and maybe we won't go to the New York Botanic Garden, the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, Wave Hill, the High Line, Queens Botanical Garden. You know, we won't go to all of them, but we'll go to the High Line.
We'll go to a couple.
We'll go to a couple. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And certainly.
And the next time, a couple of different ones.
A couple of different ones. Yeah. Yeah. So I think just visiting is a huge part of that. And since many of these places are so committed to educating folks, you learn a lot just walking around. And then if you're in a community that's fortunate enough to have one of these great organizations, getting involved, whether that's taking a class that certainly supports these places, or you know, having your birthday party at one of these places, volunteering your time, buying a membership, all of these things help these organizations continue to do what they do, and it's great for the community, so it's a great thing to support.
All right, now knowing that this is not an exhaustive list and we are not going to hit all of the great public gardens in Iowa, I would love for each of you to share just a few of your favorites in Iowa.
Well, of course, there's Ryman Gardens, and I can't not mention Ryman Gardens.
And it's one of my favorites, I can say that.
And of course, that's part of Iowa State University in Ames. But some other ones that are close to me, personally, I got my interest. One of the places that sparked my interest in gardening is the Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, which was very close to where I grew up. and is a wonderful place. They have an amazing hosta collection there.
And dwarf conifers
and
as
dwarf
well.
Conifers too, yep. So that's a wonderful spot. I'm also a little partial to the Bicklehopped Arboretum
also,
in Clinton, Iowa.
Also very nice, very nice. Nice
yep.
conifer collection there as well.
Yes.
And trees, other trees too, not lots just conifers.
Lots of wonderful trees there too. I really enjoy the Iowa Arboretum, which mm-hmm. I've already mentioned too. But I don't. What about you, Cindy?
Well, and then I also like things like the Brenton Arboretum, mm-hmm. As well as in Dallas Center Grimes. And then I like the oddball ones too, like the Better Homes and Gardens Test Garden. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that. It's only a public garden for 2 hours on Friday from noon to two. But it's this small space garden that really gives me a lot of ideas in my landscape.
Yeah. So. And of course, the Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden, one of the bigger ones in the state. They have a beautiful conservatory. They've gone through a lot of changes in the last years.
It looks so great. And you get to see it kind of progress and how it kind of grows up again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Pam just emailed and mentioned Newton Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Another
yep.
fairly new one. So it's another nice one to kind of see how things grow and expand.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you have one of these public gardens near you, it's a great idea to go multiple times of year, right? Because mm-hmm. right now is a great time to see things in bloom. But there are other things to see throughout the growing season.
Yeah.
Right. And there's one that I like that I've visited that Aaron, you haven't been to, is Vanderveer.
I haven't been to
Botanic Gardens. And it's a really old one. It has a lot of Victorian charm and this really old kind of conservatory that they do these changing displays.
And where is Vanderveer?
Vanderveer is in Davenport. So it's in the Quad Cities areas. And then the Quad City Botanic Garden is just across the river.
Yep.
Of course, Iowa State University's campus is also a beautiful place to
right.
wander around this time
also
of year.
Also a nice place
and,
as well.
And there are lots of places like historic homes and mm-hmm. historic estates that would easily be classified as this. So in the Cedar Rapids area, Bruce Moore has mm-hmm. wonderful gardens that surround that historic home and become a great oasis.
Well,
and
Pella
for
the tulips, I mean, mm-hmm. it just becomes a fascinating place to visit as well.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, joining us in just a moment. DNR District Forester Mark Bitosh. And you can join us, too, with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and joining us now, Mark Bitosh, DNR District Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And Cindy and Aaron already mentioned a bunch of arboretums around the state. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you want to add on this National Public Gardens Day?
Diddle, 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 diddle. I was just checking off my list as they went.
Awesome.
Another smaller one for a community is Muscatine has an arboretum
yes.
there that's actually connected to the Muscatine County Conservation Board natural area, and they actually have a nature center right all connected where they have the arboretum, the nature center, they have a pond for fishing and all kinds of things to do. I would also, as a DNR employee, would say we have beautiful state parks. If they want mm-hmm. a more non-designed type atmosphere to take mom on a trail hike or a walk or to a lake or whatever, we have beautiful state parks across the state, and we also have numerous state forests across the state where people could take mom this weekend.
Right. Well, and as a mom, I can say some moms love hikes. So.
Right. And actually, still some of the wildflowers, the Jack in the Pulpit mm-hmm. are coming, forest phlox, there's a lot of things.
Columbine.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Sweet mm-hmm. Sicily. There's all kinds of things still out there in some of these places that are just starting to take off in our forest areas. And even Neil Smith, Prairie Preserve, National Prairie, over at Prairie City. You know, those things are just starting to have things happen too. So there's all kinds of opportunities for people to see nature this weekend and throughout the summer.
I was going to say maybe every weekend.
Yes.
All right, let's get to some questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. First up, we've got another great garden suggestion. Lou Ann is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hi. Norridge Park in Cedar Rapids always has a garden. You know, they label their plants and everything. You know, it gives you great ideas of what to do. And as the season progresses, it just turns beautiful. They keep it well-maintained, and it's a nice evening thing, or you can sit there and listen to the band concerts when you have the concerts in the park, and it's so nice. And also Bruce Moore has wonderful gardens, too.
Yeah, I love Norridge Park for the annuals. The annual displays there, checking out different cultivars, it's great. It's like a trial garden.
Lou Ann, thank you so much for your call. And I love seeing other people's annual displays because they take so much work, and I don't have annual displays in my home. All right. Phil is on the line next in Indianola. Hi, Phil.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
We have some 3-year-old dwarf cherry trees in our backyard that have set on a lot of fruit, but last night the deer have managed to strip most of the leaves off the trees. My question is, I'm not worried about the fruit so much, but are they going to survive that kind of damage?
I would say that, especially this early in the season, they'll probably be just fine. Those leaves will sprout back out.
Yeah, they should relieve. As long as there's not any bark or trunk damage.
They haven't stripped the trunk. I've managed to put bird netting over them now, like closing the gate after the horses are out. to deter the deer.
So you just look at this as it just had a little bit of a pruning opportunity, and it will probably relief out.
It's a pretty severe pruning opportunity.
Yes.
I'm going to throw in there,
and
time will tell.
Go ahead.
I mean, there's always, that's a lot of damage, and this is a tough time for them to lose their foliage. But I've seen some damage to some trees already this spring, and within the last 2 weeks, they're already rebudding. So a lot of it depends on what the condition of that tree was before. If it's fairly healthy, it probably has a decent chance.
Yeah, the leaves were just a gorgeous, shiny, green, dark color. I mean, they were really healthy-looking trees.
And apparently really tasty, too.
Apparently, yeah. And just on an aside, we planted some hazelnut bushes, and they're just little 2-foot-tall guys. Are the deer going to attack them when they start to leaf out?
Deer like everything pretty much, unless it's plastic. So anything you can do is something that you want to protect. I know of very few deer unfriendly plants. I mean, you'll see lists, but if you can protect them, I would protect them.
And do you have any suggestions for useful protection? I mean, there are lots of things that people say will keep deer out of your garden, and not all of them work.
Well, early on, like you said, the netting. The one thing you have to be careful with the netting is, personally, I like cages, T-posts and cages, something strong, good wire, and actually wire that's maybe 2x2 or 2x4 that doesn't let the rabbits in either, and depending on the height. The thing you have to be careful with the netting is, deer are smart, and they will actually push that netting in towards the plant so that the tissue pops out depending on the coarseness of the netting. If it's real fine netting and it can't come out fine, but if it's a netting that things can grow out of, they'll push that netting forward and actually chew as they come. So
building cages may seem like a lot of work right now, but it might save you a lot of anguish later.
But there's also different repellent mixes. These folks, Cindy and Aaron, can maybe add to some of those things. There's all kinds of different things that could be used.
You just have to try and be smarter than the deer. And sometimes that's hard.
Very.
All right. Let's get to another question. This one's from Ken. I have a little lime tree in my house that has a long runner. I would like to cut it and root it without traumatizing the tree and my future limes and maximize the chances of having two trees. Any suggestions?
Have you ever done cuttings on lime trees, Aaron?
I haven't taken a cutting from a lime tree. I would think, I mean, I don't know the diameter of it, but if it's what I'm imagining, removing it shouldn't be too problematic for the mother plant, if you will.
Right, and taking a couple of cuttings shouldn't be harmful. I would probably take more than one because I don't think, usually with rooted cuttings, I don't know the success rate on citrus. I have a little potted lime tree as well, and it's blooming a lot, and make sure you remove those blooms and put it in, you know, the typical cutting media of sand or perlite, and keep your fingers crossed on this one.
All right, here's a question from Lori. Mm-hmm. I seeded this spring and will again in the fall, just trying to get a jump on areas that are bare. I went from no grass in areas to about 30% filled in. Is there a weed and feed I can use on this new grass area to help the seed along and control weeds?
I would probably stick, especially since it's a new seeding, I would probably wait till fall to fertilize. And fall is a better time to seed too. I think that's a little counterintuitive to some people, but seeding in the fall tends to have less weeds, and fertilizing in the fall is really very beneficial too. So keep watering, especially if it gets hot and dry over the summer. And if you start to see a lot of kind of really coarse weeds, you can go and hand pull. But I'd be a little hesitant to put down any herbicide right now because this grass is still relatively young.
Yeah, if you can wait until spring for any kind of weed control or chemical weed control, I think that
right.
would be best.
Right.
All right. She also has a second question. I want to plant a couple of hydrangea. Is there a specific side of the house they would do best on? I'm not someone who will baby it along, so I need something more maintenance-free. Is this a bad choice for me?
I think it depends on the hydrangea.
It does.
So the panicle hydrangeas, or sometimes you see them as PG hydrangeas, these are plants that like a lot of sun. And so that would be the sunny side of your house. But there are others like the Annabelle type hydrangeas. There are some of the big leaf hydrangeas, the ones that are blue or pink, right. that do bloom on current year growth, but aren't always the greatest
plants. That's not the plant for her, no.
No, that one, yeah, and that's what I was kind of getting at, is those are not as good for the casual gardener.
They're a little more temperamental.
Yeah, but like the Annabelle, it can be very nice. There's another cultivar called Betterbell, I think. Mm-hmm. Both of those are very nice. They would like a little bit more shade. So it depends on what kind of hydrangea.
So you could have a hydrangea on both sides of the house. One in the sun, one in the shade. And the panicle or the Annabelle both do really well with very little care.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Rob is on the line in Davenport with a tree question. Hi, Rob.
Hello.
Hi.
Anyway, I had some questions about my ash trees. I first wanted to make a plug for Vandeveer Garden, and also for my son who works for the New York Botanical Garden.
Oh, nice.
Buxton Garden. So at any rate, I have two ash trees, and one needs to be, or they both need to be trimmed, but one is growing into a neighbor's tree, so I need to get that trimmed. Should I just have those taken down? I was told by the guy who came out to look at them that they were both healthy and not infected with the ash borer, so he didn't know how long they would last. But should I have them taken down, do you think, or should I trim them?
That's the million-dollar question, Rob, that we all wish we had the answer. And really what it comes down to is your individual tree and your ideas of what you want. So the emerald ash borer is in the Quad Cities, Westlake, all through that area. It's there. So if you're not going to treat those trees, pretty much 99.9.2% your ash trees are going to die at some point. And usually once that insect shows up into a county, the general information that we're getting from the East Coast and other places in Michigan where it's been is basically it takes about 5 to 10 years for trees in that area to start declining and dying. And depending on how close a particular infestation is to you, it could be sooner or later. So you probably have at least a couple more years before you maybe start to show symptoms. And what you need to decide is, do you want to just let it go, and then once they decline, take them out? One option is if you have room to start planting trees now, some spaces, plant some new trees, let mm-hmm. those trees go, then take them out. If you don't have any room for new trees at all, then you say, well, I could proactively just take them down, start over, and go from there. You probably have at least a couple years, but at some point those trees mm-hmm. are going to decline. So you just need to decide how important are those trees to you. Are you willing to, you know, just kind of mm-hmm. let it go until it starts to decline? And as we get that decline, it may be harder to get some tree services and stuff out to get those trees down, because once this hits and a lot of trees start to die, they're going to die very quickly. So everybody's going to want ash trees cut down. Again, those that treat, hopefully some of those will be hanging on. So you have different options. You just need to figure out for uh-huh. your situation what's going to work best. I don't think there's a wrong or right answer. It really is going to be what works best for your situation. But I think you have a little time for them to live. You just kind of have to make that decision from there what you want to do.
Do the trees get more dangerous to trim as they get infected? Do they get more brittle or something like that?
They do. So once they start to decline and die, you know, once you start seeing symptoms and when things really ramp up, a tree could die in a year or two. And once that tree dies, depending on the kind of ash, especially green ash, they can get pretty critical within like a year or so. So if there are a large tree and near the house, it is going to be more critical to get that tree down once it starts to decline.
Rob, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Jeanette. Last year, some of the leaves on my peonies were mildewed. The plants had bloomed. This year, one of the plant's buds are dried little nubs. There's no evidence of mildew on the leaves yet. The other plants appear to be ready to bloom. What should I do with this affected plant? I'd like to save it if possible, but fear for the other plants nearby.
Yeah, what we've seen is a lot of powdery mildew on peonies in the last few years. I don't know what's happening to the buds of this one.
That's not something that powdery mildew does, right?
Right, it usually doesn't. There are some other things that will do this. That the buds kind of dry up and die. It could be not enough sun. So it could be something as simple as an environmental condition, then it just decided to abort those buds. I would just prune those out or kind of take those out, because oftentimes if you just take out that tip, peonies will also produce some side buds as well. So it may still bloom for you, just maybe just a little bit later. And I don't necessarily think that it's a problem for the neighboring peonies either. I've seen powdery mildew on many peonies, and that's usually affecting the leaves and not so much the buds.
All right, so she doesn't have to worry about it.
Not yet. If it continues to be a problem and this is something that this peony doesn't bloom every year, then we need to do a little more investigation as to what's going on.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Patty is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how far apart do I need to plant emerald arborvitaes, and how fast will they grow?
Are you trying to create a hedge? How fast do you want them to touch?
I'm sorry, yes. Privacy. Yeah, I want them for privacy. Thank you.
I think emerald arborvitae, that cultivar, we have some of them out at Ryman Gardens. They tend to get about 6-8 feet across.
Yeah, and I've seen them planted on 4-5 foot centers if mm-hmm. you want to get them really close and fill in pretty quickly. But
how do they do if they're planted that close together? Does that impact them later on?
It can.
Yeah, the closer you plant them together, the faster you'll get a hedge, but the more likely you'll get, you'll kind of cut off circulation and can run into kind of some browning potentially. Actually, arborvitae as a whole don't have a lot of disease issues. Their biggest challenge are deer.
And winter burn.
And sometimes. Winter burn, mm-hmm. right. And so I think overall, and maybe Mark can chime in on this too, but I think overall, the closer she puts them together, the sooner they'll touch. But disease-wise, I don't see a huge... I mean, it's not like some of the other plants that we talk about.
Now, Mark?
I might tend to go just a little wider to give, just to realize it's going to take them a little longer to close, but in general, they'll last a little longer. And the one thing about Arborvitae, they do tend to grow together better than a lot of other plants.
Like right,
if you have spruce
right.
and pine and a lot of those, they'll really shade out. But Arborvitae is one that tends to tolerate itself a little better. Mm-hmm. But I would look at the ultimate width and make sure that you put them on center so they each have enough room to just about touch or come a little closer. But I would maybe push a foot or two a little wider just to know long term. You'll have a little better long-term survival.
Right. And I have seen after a nasty winter a lot of really sad orange arborvitae
right.
barriers. So maybe give them a little more resiliency. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. And here's a Twitter question from Brian, I've got an oak tree right next to my house. It has two rotting branches with fungi, and I want to know how to keep it healthy.
Well, I would say this winter, Ryan, I would prune those rotting dead branches off, but I would not do it right now because of the risk of oak wilt. This is the worst time of year. As long as those are not at risk, if they do fall, they're not going to hurt anything or hurt anybody. If you actually think they could hurt somebody, you could prune them, but immediately if you, basically with a dead branch, you should be able to cut back to what we call the collar without wounding any new tissue. If you could do that, I would still, if I do any nicking, I would treat that with latex paint. But if you can avoid it and wait till probably the middle of November after a couple of good frost, but on most trees, especially if it's a large tree, I would look to where these branches are. If these branches are in the lower portion of the tree, a lot of oaks and stuff are self-pruning. Ash does it. Some of the maples do it. And a lot of times that shade will cause those branches to die, and that's just kind of a natural process sometimes, or if there's another tree. And if there's fungi on it, just pruning that off will help. If that dead and decaying branches are on the top, on the very top of the tree, then I would really take a close evaluation. Do I have decline? If it's on the top, I'm really usually kind of concerned about that kind of dieback versus if it's on the interior or the lower part, that's usually shade related. Usually. There's always exceptions, but the best thing is if he can get it pruned off late fall, that would be the ideal. If he has to do it now because of safety, get the latex paint ready and treat any wound that he would create immediately.
All right. He also has a second question. He says, I have a sand pit and a lot of mulch from a previous owner. Can I just till that under and plant grass on top?
Well, we do plant grass on sand-based kind of soils. However, I think it would be a little too well-drained, and you're going to have to water it a little too much. So if there's any way to kind of scatter that sand around and then level it off with some soil, of some sort, I think you would have a much better lawn or grass establishment.
And would you want to try to just have a layer of soil on top, or would you want to incorporate that into the sand?
Well, I would hope that you could, so it's not just one big sand pit. You've removed some of that sand and filled in with some soil, and okay. then you kind of till it all together at some point.
Yeah.
Because you don't want a sand pocket down there. Either.
Right. And I would not till in the mulch either. I would rake the mulch up and use it somewhere else.
Sure.
Every time you till, you just bring up a whole new bank of weed seeds, and especially establishing a new lawn. That's not a good thing.
All right. So you may save some work on this end, but create a whole lot more work on the
mm-hmm.
other end.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Craig is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Craig.
Hello. I would just like to know about the basics of growing roses. I kind of want to put some in pots, and how do you do that? Do you need to bring them in the winter and general pruning information.
Sure. Well, the miniature roses do really well in containers, and many of them are quite winter hardy, except if you're going to grow them in a container, you still have to protect that root ball somehow. So you can do this a couple ways. In the winter, in the fall, usually I would say around Thanksgiving, maybe a little bit later, I dig a hole in the ground and just set the pot down in that hole and let it overwinter, like in a nursery bed kind of situation. You could also pull it into like a three-season porch or something that doesn't get bitterly cold over the winter but still gets below 40 degrees. But you have to watch the watering a little bit more closely when you do something like that. So that's an option too. In general, as long as you get roses, especially roses that are on their own roots, or like a miniature rose, all you have to do is make sure it gets plenty of sun in a container. You're going to have to make sure it gets watered. You'll probably benefit from a little bit of fertilizer. I think the easiest way to fertilize something like this would be either to use like an Osmocote product,
slow
release fertilizer. You could, every three times you water, use a soluble water-based fertilizer. That would work too. Make sure it gets plenty of sun. That would be the hardest part probably, and make sure it doesn't dry out. That would be the other growing in a container. And then pruning-wise, after winter, wait for the shrub to sprout back, and whatever is still brown, you can remove and leave everything else.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Mark in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've seen photos of the state champion juniper, or red cedar, and it's huge. And I wonder if there are any arboreta in Iowa that have, say, 100-year specimens of juniper.
Wow, of juniper, I don't know for sure. It's funny, the eastern red cedar is not a plant a lot of people enjoy the look of, and so they don't often end up in these kind of botanical gardens.
There are some nice cultivars out there.
Yes, yeah. I think one of the oldest gardens in the state that we've mentioned is Vanderveer in Davenport. That park was established in the 1880s. So that would be my best guess.
Right. Mark, do you have any knowledge of state?
Not in any arboretums.
Yeah.
I know in some of our state parks and stuff, there's actually some eastern red cedar that could be 200 to 300 years old in some places, but they're not really identified as, hey, come look at this old eastern red cedar. But most of the arboretums are so young in this region. But I will say it's a great windbreak tree with not a lot of disease and insects. But usually when people call and ask for a good windbreak tree, and I say that, I always wait for the ugh. And I usually ug them before they ug me and say, I know you're going to say ugh, but it is a great tree. Because the thing with Iowa is we really struggle with conifers as a whole.
Right.
Conifers tend to like kind of moist, cool environments. Our summers get hotter, and a lot of conifers struggle. That's why we don't have a lot of native conifers in Iowa in the first place. But it is a good one out there.
All right. Back to the phones. Joanne in Kossuth County. Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
What's your question?
We have a weeping willow tree that we planted about 5 years ago, and it was flourishing. It started sending up branches from the bottom, where the root base would go into the ground. And it just keeps doing that. We've clipped them off, but all we're getting is this weeping willow bush and not a weeping willow tree.
So are you actually, Joanne, seeing some dieback on the top?
No.
I mean, the top is growing, but you're just getting a lot of sprouting.
Right.
You're not causing any type of basal damage, it doesn't get hit with the mower or anything like that. Okay.
I guess the lawnmower person is here in the house, and he said, yes, the top is dying out.
So it is. Okay.
Yes.
So being it a willow, and it's only been 5 years, that's pretty early. But if the top is dying, usually sprouting is a response to that. So what that tells me is there could have been a canker disease or some type of dryness stress or something. Again, this is kind of back to my earlier comments. When I see top dieback from the top down. Usually that's some type of root stress or something like that. And the root is healthy enough that it still will sprout, but there was something that happened that caused that dieback, and the water didn't get up there. And if it was a stress situation, again, with willow, there are some different canker diseases and stuff. What I would look for where that dieback is, if you look below where the live tissue is to the transition area where the dead tissue is, look for sunken bark tissue, discoloration. Those will be indications of canker diseases. And all you can really do is cut out the dead stuff and then try to work with the sprouts and see if you can develop a tree from there. But if you can't, you may end up with a weeping willow bush. But something happened within the last couple of years to cause some type of stress, probably cause that dieback, if there wasn't broken damage or wind damage or something like that.
All right. Well,
so it's not a good sign when things are sprouting from the base and you're getting dieback. Something happened there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry for the bad news, Joanne. Here's a question from Carol. I have a very old Weigelo. It was well established when we moved here 35 plus years ago. It's very woody. Multiple questions about that. One, does it bloom on old or new wood?
It does bloom on last season's wood. It's one of the earlier blooming shrubs. And it sounds like this is a good candidate for renewal pruning. So,
all right, and that's the next question. How drastically can I cut it back? Can I cut it to the ground? And when? Or is there a better way to cut it back and get rid of the brittle old wood?
Yeah, if it's a fairly large one, instead of cutting back the whole thing to the ground, I would take out, you know, a third of the stems, those largest stems, every year for 3 years, and then you kind of renewed this plant. And then you still have some blooms. The best time to do this renewal pruning is when it's dormant, so when you can see those stems and get the cuts really nice, kind of close to the ground. So I would wait until next February, March might be a good time to kind of get out there and remove, you know, 3 or 4 of those kind of large stems.
All right, here's a question from Scott in Ames. I have 7 mature white oaks on my property. 2 of them are probably close to 100 years old. I believe 4 of them are currently suffering from oak tatters. Leaves are deformed, only thin tissue around the vein, and they seem to have dropped immature leaves. I notice a couple of hackberries on my property also have similar symptoms with dropping immature leaves. Can you talk about oak tatters? How soon will the trees recover? Does it affect them long term?
Wow, that's a lot of questions.
Yeah, and that was a big sigh, Mark Vitosh.
It is, yes. A big sigh. I've been working with this condition since 1995, and I'm getting reports that people are seeing it in different parts of the state this year, even on hackberry. I actually looked at some white oaks the other day, and basically the symptom that you see is the leaves come out, they look fine, and especially on oak, what happens is all of a sudden you'll see the edges will turn kind of a purplish kind of white color, and then within 7 to 8 days after that happening, that tissue actually falls off, and you're kind of left with a skeleton. Some people call it bare bones syndrome. We generally call it tatters. All the research and all the information out there has tied this condition not to freezing temperatures, but to particular herbicides that are used in agriculture. There's particular chemicals, and we're seeing it pretty much on the eastern side of the state. A lot of its timing is when those chemicals are used and when those oak leaves are coming out. There is research from the University of Illinois that has actually made a direct connection between those chemicals and that condition. Iowa State did some research, but they've never published it, and that's all I'll say from there. But it showed the same type of connection. The hackberry is a little more off. The University of Nebraska has done some research. Some of their information shows connections. The bottom line is what we normally see is that tissue's damaged. They look terrible. Usually within 4 to 6 weeks, they will try to relieve, and usually they do. My concern is if that happens year after year after year, that's like a gypsy moth.
Right.
Defoliating.
If this is a chemical drift problem, it could happen every
yeah,
single year.
Yeah, this is not your typical drift. This is throughout the tree. So it's not, when we think of herbicide drift, we usually think of one side of the tree. In this case, the whole tree usually shows the same symptom. And if one area shows it the worst, it's usually the lower because those leaves are smaller as they develop. The one thing we've noticed is if those leaves are usually 2 to 3 inches, when this material is out there, we don't see tatters. It's if those leaves are an inch to an inch and a half, they seem very susceptible. But the bottom line is typically they will releaf and refoliate. If it only happens every few years, I think trees are going to be okay. But if it happens to the same trees in multiple years, there's stress. Definite stress, which you can get two-line chestnut borer, armillary root rot, and other things coming in. And in a few places in natural areas in Iowa, we have seen some of that stress on white oaks. Not always tatter-related, but we see tatters every year at different levels. So far this year, initially, I've seen some hackberries that have no leaves at all. But the ones I saw had green buds, and the buds are getting ready to break, so they're going to try to come back. But it's tough on them.
All right.
This is a big box, a big concern, but this is Iowa, and there's a lot of discussion looking at this condition.
More to come.
More to come.
All right. But there's nothing Scott can do right now.
No. What I would say is even though these are big trees, if we were to go dry, I would put a soaker hose out on the drip line on some of these trees later this summer just to help them along. But that's about all you could do. I would not fertilize or anything like that. But even on big trees, a little supplement water during dry, dry periods would help.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Brian is on the line in Hazleton. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
What's your question?
I'm considering planting an oak tree on the west side of my house and just looking for a good variety. I got it down to about three or four different choices. Tin oak, maybe a chinkapin, or northern red oak. Any suggestions?
The one concern, I love pin oak, but the one concern about is I would look at my soil conditions, and if I have a higher pH over 7, pin oak tends to have really high potential to be chlorotic. The other thing with pin oak is those branches tend to droop down a lot, so you tend to have to do a lot of pruning to get your eventual clearance. But it's probably the faster of the three. But red oak, I love red oak as a shade tree. I have a couple in my neighborhood, and I wish they were in my front yard because they're a beautiful tree. The thing is, if you're going to use them for shade, I would probably plant them 30 to 35 feet from the house if you have that kind of room, because most of these trees are going to get 30 to 40 feet wide. I also think chinkapin is a great option. I would even throw swamp white oak as an alternative as a nice oak shade tree too. The red oak, though, is probably going to give you more, is going to give you more for fall color, but they're all going to produce acorns. But I think those are all. My only caution would be to the pin oak because of the pH and all the pruning.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your call. We had a lot of questions we couldn't get to today, but we will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday on Talk of Iowa. Here's a reminder from Mary. Remember, there are lots of large mature trees in Iowa's cemeteries. The walks are paved and the scenery is lovely.
Nice.
Great idea for this weekend. Aaron Style, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully we'll see you in a garden.
Yeah, Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully, I don't think I'm going to a cemetery on Sunday.
All right. And Mark Patosh, thank you so much.
Thank you as always.